Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to the Magic Week in Review, bringing you news, rumor, and culture reports from the front lines of the magic industry. I'm Justin Robert Young, editor of iTricks.com, and in this January 31st, 2010 edition of the podcast, you will hear about a random member of the Ellen DeGeneres audience knocking the chat show host on her butt. I guess her feet. Off her feet. Onto her butt. How young is too young to be performing on stage? What the final damage for David Copperfield after his big investigation might be finally coming to a close. And finally, stay tuned to the very end of this podcast when you will hear who is the greatest non-magic showman alive. Here to help us with all of this is a man whose Pandora system is just released and available now. He also works with Paper Crane. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Magic Week in Review, Shane Black. How you doing, Shane?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
I'll tell you what, it is a pleasure to have you on. Where are we talking to you from?
Oh, you're talking, I am in Columbus, Ohio, but it's absolutely freezing here, so I'm originally from Texas, so this is not a place I really deemed it is very necessary for me to be at right now, but I'm actually here, and so I would call it something that I can't really say right now.
Well, cool. I'll tell you what, I got a buddy of mine in Dallas right now where it's snowing, so I don't know, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, I know. I was sitting there thinking, I can't wait till I could get back home to see the peeps. And then I called my father last night, and he told me that it was snowing in Texas, which that alone almost gave me a heart attack. But hey.
You know, it happens. It happens to the best of us, even Texas.
Right.
So all right. Well, here, I'll tell you what, before we get into anything, I do want to remind everybody that TrickShotMagic.com is, of course, a big sponsor for not only this podcast, but all of iTricks. You know, they are all over the place. Last week, I kind of implored everybody who listens to this podcast to please go ahead and support Sam Blankenship and TrickShotMagic.com, just because, hey, if it weren't for them, then maybe we'd be doing a few less of these podcasts, each month. You know, it really helps. So please show love to the advertiser and go pick up Corinda's 13 Steps to Mentalism. You know, if you are a beginner, if you are, you know, somebody who read the book at some point, but maybe your copy's a little tattered and worn, go on over to TrickShotMagic.com, pick up Corinda's 13 Steps to Mentalism, and you will be a happier man than you were when you first heard me read this promo. Again, TrickShotMagic.com. I think they're expanding as well. They're opening a new location in Old Town Temecula. But check them out. There's a reason why they can bring you the brick-and-mortar experience to the internet one click at a time, and it's because they're doing it in the flesh. So TrickShotMagic.com, check it out. All right, Shane, an audience member for the Ellen DeGeneres talk show, was called out of his seat this week as part of a segment entitled Our Talented Audience. Put on the spot, Mike Jacobson performed the invisible deck and was then called to the couch where he performed another trick, both to big reactions from Ellen DeGeneres, who has a history of loving magic, but this was definitely kind of something special.
That guy was just plain lucky. You know,
now, why would you say that?
He's going to spend the rest of the holidays talking about that. That's really great whenever you can be pulled out of the audience and have an opportunity to show your talent to the world like that on national television when it's not even planned. That's just phenomenal because people really aren't even expecting that. That's really great.
It really does add to the effect. If magic is miracles happening from thin air, this adds to that thin air part of the equation.
Absolutely, because, you know, it doesn't look like it's planned, and I think people are going to receive whatever it is that he's doing a lot more than, you know, as if it looks like it's planned. People are more susceptible to being, you know, I would say, you know, on edge and seeing, okay, this guy's going to blow me away. But if it's kind of not planned and it kind of comes out like that, I think when people see it, they're going to be like, Oh, okay. It could be the slightest little thing and still look amazing. But what he did, I saw, I watched the video. Phenomenal approach with the invisible deck, and it's kind of refreshing to see the invisible deck, because I don't see the invisible deck used very often anymore. It's almost like one of those tricks that's just kind of become obsolete. So.
Yeah, and you know, it was one of those really cool things because it gave kind of Ellen a time to sparkle during the trick. I mean,
Sure.
it's one of those moments where it's like, you know, and I can understand there was a commenter on iTricks. I think it was Tim Drake who was saying, oh, this is staged. Look at all these elements. But it's like, you know, I don't think it is. I think this is a regular thing that she does on her show, that she calls people down. It just so happened that this guy kind of knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was staged. I don't think there was anything that said that it looked like it was staged to me. I would say that when I looked at it, I mean, obviously a lot of us guys that do magic, we always have a deck of cards with us. So to say it was staged is probably not. But yeah, I think he did phenomenal with it, and she definitely enjoyed it, and I know the crowd did too. So that's tough too. I mean, he held his nerve. You could tell that he's been doing it. You know, he's done this a lot. For him to walk up there on national television without, you know, having any knowledge that he was going to do it, that takes a lot of nerve from someone. So you know that to me, it seems that he's done it before at some
Now,
point.
let me ask you this, Shane. Let's put you in Mike Jacobson's shoes. And you're in that audience, and they say, hey, who's got a talent? We want to do this segment. Number one, what do you have on you, and what would you perform?
Well, I would run. No, I'm teasing, but
No, come on, Shane.
I'm
You're going to
teasing
stand.
you.
Come on, a
No,
Texan like you, you're going to stand and deliver.
I will deliver. I don't know if it'll be great, but no, it'd be good. Usually, whenever I'm put on the spot like that, I'm going to kind of turn into a fanboy for a minute. I always do Stigmata, because Stigmata with using the peak is always just something that kind of gets on this kind of on the side of bizarre magic, but it looks impromptu. I always got loops on me. I always bust out some mentalism. If they got a watch, usually a watch steals what I go into. So those are kind of the four main things I usually go into right off the bat. If I really don't have a lot of stuff on me, I usually at this point in my career, surprisingly, I don't carry a lot on me. I carry like a deck of cards, some coins, maybe a few cards in my wallet, and that's about it now, and a loop. So. It's going to be somewhere along those things. I'm going to do my routines using that. So possibly I did an interview back in the day for this college, and I had not intended on being on there. But when I came on there, I did something utilizing loops, because I happen to use a loop. So I would have done some type of mentalism, watch steel loops, or maybe even stigmata or something. So because I'm just a big fan of that trick. So.
Absolutely. Now, let me just point this out. I know, well, Mike actually contacted us, Mr. Mike Jacobson.
Did he?
He did. And you know, he made he told us that Ellen's people had talked to him. They really, really liked him on the show. They want to have him back, but he had to submit a video of him doing something, and he was you know, very excited. Really liked you know, the fact that we covered it on the site, which always makes me feel good when people
Sure.
read their own press on iTricks. But said that, you know, he's a fan of the site, and he wanted the help of everybody who reads iTricks to get a read on maybe what he should do next time he's on. So I know it was kind of a quick turnaround. I think he may have even said that he needed stuff sent in by Sunday night. But just in case you want to, you know, wish him well or give him some other ideas, magicmikela@gmail.com is what he suggested you use to contact him. And hey, help a guy out, you know?
Oh,
We're all on the same
absolutely. Good
team.
luck, man. I wish the best for everybody. I really do. I hope that everybody gets, you know, pursues and gets endeavors in life that they want, and you know, I wish the best for them. I will recommend this. If you're going to do TV, make it short and simple. Don't do long drawn out tricks. Make sure if you can't fit it under 3 minutes, then you know, it's tough to keep an effect to keep people's interest on TV with anything that lasts longer than 3 minutes. And if you've worked in TV, people will tell you that, regardless whether it's commercial, you're doing an effect, a magic trick, you're doing a storyline, anything that you're doing, they try to keep it short. So, hey, you can even do the Pandora system.
There we go. Hey, come on. We'll get into the Pandora system later into the show. Calm down. I'll get your plugs in, baby. Don't
I had
worry
to be
about
thankful for a minute.
it. A 13-year-old boy from Michigan was selected by a traveling show entitled Cirque Dreams Illusion as a magician after the young lad won a TV contest. The kid did so well that he was retained for the remainder of their current run. Let me ask you this, Shane. How young is too young to perform magic on stage professionally? And let me put it this way. It's not necessarily in the realm of how talented somebody could be by any particular age, but the audience, you know, does a magician have to be X amount age for the audience to take him seriously?
That is a good question because I will tell you, that is a real good question. I will tell you, I think it depends if the audience participation, if they're aware of who they're seeing, if they're aware they're going to see someone that's 4, 5, 6 years old to do a stage act, then I'm sure they'll be more receptive to someone of that age. I think if they've come there and they're expecting to see this big show and he comes out there and he's 4 or 5, I'm not sure his age, which is phenomenal that he got asked to do that again, because that just goes to show his skill. But obviously he knew what he was, you know, he's had something down pretty tight. He's worked out some type of routine that he's worked on. So being that age is really hard to say. I think, you know, if we're not going to talk about talent, we're just going to talk about opportunity and how receptive the audience would be to him. I think the audience would actually be more interested if he's younger because, you know, people have seen, you know, magicians for years on stage, but they are much older. And I think a lot of these younger guys, I've seen a lot of these younger guys coming in now that are just phenomenal now. I mean, they're smoking a lot of us. They're blowing a lot of us away. And so I think the audience would be more receptive to them. And I think if you're getting up there and you're 3 or 4 or 5 and you're singing and you're not creating much of a storyline, you're going to lose their attention. But you know, with a little work and a little training, I don't think really age is an issue.
Yeah, I do think that there is some level of the audience being, oh, there's that little boy doing magic. You know, like you have to have some level of gravitas to just be a magician and not be a kid doing magic.
Right, and that's why I was saying it would have to be, there would have to be some training, there would have to be a lot of time spent into routining with the kid to make sure that the show he's doing is not just that kid just doing magic. I mean, he would have to come out and it would have to definitely be different at that age to catch their attention. That's what, you know, I mean, I think it's a tough question. I really think it really depends on the individual and you know, it's really hard to say. I mean, I've seen people you just would not think that, you know, they would put on a good show and you go and watch and it's one of those memorial shows that you remember for the rest of your life. So I think it just really depends on the individual, actually.
All right. Well, we might have heard the final revelation of the David Copperfield case. I mean, this thing has stretched on for over a year. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just go back to iTunes. I mean, geez, Google David Copperfield federal investigation. You can get all the grimy details. But for those who are in the know, we will pick up our adventure here. According to police reports filed by the Bellevue City Prosecutor's Office, that is, of course, in Washington State, the woman who once accused David Copperfield of sexual assault has been indicted on charges of making a false statement to a public servant and prostitution in a separate case involving another man in December of 2009. You guys might remember that the federal investigation against Copperfield was dropped about a month ago. The civil suit, of course, remains in play. However, I mean, that claim might have been irreparably damaged by the accuser's arrest last month. Let me ask you this, Shane. And on this podcast and iTrix in general, we try to just stick to just the facts. We don't try to do a lot of parsing or analysis into the David Copperfield You'll just let what?
I'll just let the news do that.
Exactly. Well, that's and I've mentioned, I think the first time that news broke on this, I went on about a 10-minute rant on this podcast about how there were still, you know, magic pun headlines and leads in these newspaper articles. And it's like, you know, like really, like this is about a rape, people. Like at what line does it stop being, oh, look, he's a magician. Tee hee hee. Let's make a magic wand joke, you know?
And, oh, man.
And this is, you know, this is, you know, it was the same thing with this. Like, you know, Copperfield might make rape accusation disappear. Anyway, that's a whole nother case. Let me ask you this. In the eyes of laymen, considering the fact that, you know, this might scuttle, you know, the credibility of the accuser, what is the damage, if at all, to the reputation of Copperfield in the eyes of the public?
You know, I think that it's not going to be much, to be honest with you. And I think that's the God honest truth. I mean, that's the kind of world we live in now. I think that when people are going to Vegas, if they're going to see his show, they're going to see his show regardless. He has created phenomenal magic for over 20 years, and he has brought magic to TV sets and shows and different effects to people that they've never even imagined. And I think that that's all people think about when they go to Vegas. I seriously don't think they're going to look at, okay, this guy possibly might have raped a girl. I'm not going to go see a show. Because if they did keep up with that much of it, then they would have read the rest of the story. So I think people are more open-minded these days to hear both sides of the story. So I don't think that.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, I might disagree in principle with that idea. I do believe that it is, and it's obviously, you know,
sure,
it's so hard to think, you know, in sort of the broader black and white terms when you're dealing with something like, you know, prostitution charges and, you know, rape allegations and federal investigations. But that being said, if you look at it on a purely clinical news cycle level, right, in terms of the storyline, there was an accusation, an investigation, no charges filed, and almost most importantly for Copperfield and his camp, there was a final punctuation mark where her credibility was called into very, very serious question, which means that, like you said, if you are following it at all, the story ends with the girl having no credibility, which means that what happened at the beginning is invalidated. I would say that there is going to be no negative reaction to this thing, which is something I thought it was maybe inconceivable when it first started.
Oh yeah, when I first heard it, I thought the worst as well. I was like, "Wow, look, that's it."
But considering the fact that the guy's been touring throughout all of this, I mean, there was obviously the big kerfuffle when he canceled dates right when it happened. He canceled, I think, some South Pacific dates, I think in Indonesia or Malaysia, he canceled dates. Other than that, the guy's been out on the road. He's been selling out venues. He was in, you know, the MGM Grand before this thing happened, where he was doing two shows a night and just, you know, killing. So, I mean, I almost hate to say it, but I think it might, considering the fact that people were talking about David Copperfield, even in maybe the worst possible way at one point, might, I don't know, dare I say, even if incrementally have benefited the live show?
Oh, it's possible. I've been to two shows just in the past 2 months, and both of them were sold out. And, you know, I don't think it's affecting his sales at all. I mean, I didn't really keep up with the story. You know, I wasn't nose to nose with the entire story, but I will tell you, I have heard everything you've already told me up to this point. And I didn't think that it would affect his sales at all. If anything, you're right. It probably brought more attention to his shows. And with having the credibility of this woman, the way it shined in the light that it has, I think that if anything, it's not going to be one of those things where Kobe Bryant spoke about having adultery or anything like that. And, you know, just because he may have paid it off or, you know, gotten back with his wife, but that's something that will probably follow him forever. But with this Copperfield thing, I think the way it's played out so far, I think it's just kind of a hit and miss kind of thing.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Shane, let's talk about what you're working on. Your newest release is the Pandora System. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, the Pandora System. Pandora System has been a pet trick of mine for almost 5 years now in the making. It's about 60 prototypes I've been through. If you had seen the first prototype, anyone probably would have looked at it and been like, okay, this is ridiculous. But but it has turned out to be a pretty magnificent piece of utility prop to carry with you. It's very lightweight. What it does is it allows you to, I would say, insert a signed card in its numerical order in a brand new sealed deck, as well as there's a many different variations on the DVD that are taught that teach you different things as far as like walking up to a table and introducing yourself. And a guy says his name's Mark, and he spreads the cards and that have been sitting on the table the entire time. And there's one blank face card that says Mark on it. Or, you know, there's a lot of mentalism routines that you can base yourself on with that, as well as you can use with coins, anything else. It's a lightweight utility gimmick that allows you to input material into sealed decks. At any given notice, you don't have to have any index cards. You don't have to walk around worrying about, am I going to have problems using this later? At any given moment, when you're ready to use it, you can use it. You can be doing a three-hour show and then end with the show without having to fumble through your pockets and find things, having stuffy gimmicks under your arms or anything. This thing's very lightweight. It's out of the way. It comes with everything. There's no fixing up your jacket. You don't have to alter your jacket in any way or anything like that. There's even a jacketless version that, you know, I go over on the DVD as well. But yeah, it's a phenomenal phenomenal product, and I was just very lucky to actually make it happen. I actually got the idea from Mark Wilson's Magic.
Okay.
Complete Course of Book. That was what influenced it. I saw the quarter and yarn ball trick, and I said, you know, I got to play with this because I started playing with this and I started performing the effect. And the first few times I performed it, I remember I was working a nightclub, this club called Gladden's Nightclub. I've worked there every Tuesday and Thursday night performing. And I performed this on stage. And everybody just went silent for a few minutes. And I said, oh, this is a flop. And when she took that deck and started opening up the deck, just there was probably like 60, 70 people. The uproar was just crazy. I realized that it was past the point of my presentation, that the effect itself got you to a point that most card tricks can never get you. And almost like almost every person that I've ever performed it on has been, it's impossible. Everybody says that. It's impossible. So we kind of have a joke here at Paper Crane. We call it the Muhammad Ali trick. You know, impossible's nothing. You know, it's just
yeah.
we're so original, let me tell you. So, but you know, it's like, you know, it's an easy to use prop, and it does have a high end cost on it because I do hand make them, and they take me almost 26 minutes to hand make each item. And that's an approximate time. So, and you're looking at 5 years of doing it. I honestly, if I sit down and tried to show you how to make one, it'd take you over an hour and a half to make one. But I've gotten it down to where I could do it so fast, I could do them in about 30 minutes. But when I've got an order of 1,000 to fill, you know, we make very little money, so I have to pay out on materials. And now we actually have a few people helping us now, a few employees that we actually hired on to take on this project with us, because I actually opened up Pandora's box by releasing this effect. Because when I got out here in October in Columbus, Ohio, started filming, I didn't realize that we can't find manufacturing companies to make these.
Really?
It's almost impossible. No one wants to work with the material, and the material is the best that we can use. I didn't want to go cheap on it, so we used high grade stainless aluminum that we use on the actual props itself. But I would tell you, I had to bring in people, and I had to spend the last 2 months training people how to make them. And which was very interesting. I did not expect that. I was trying to get back to my life and get back to performing, and I had my responsibilities I had to fulfill here in Columbus. So I actually rented an apartment here for a few months and actually started spending Monday through Fridays training these guys how to build the systems, which was, you know, I was building them, but there's no way. When I started getting orders in from Murphy's and other companies, and I was looking at several hundred orders, I was like, okay, I was expecting, you know, a good 1,000 order, but I wasn't expecting the success that was going to follow with it. And it's done very, very well. And I'm so anxious, because this is just, it's an idea, it's a concept. So I'm anxious to see where people are going to use this system for later. And, you know, I even do a newsletter called the Pandora Community that I send out for all the people that purchase it. And I actually, every quarter of the year, I actually publish those ideas that everyone sent to me. You can use it for this, you can use it for that, you can use it for this. And I'm going to pick one winner every newsletter, every time we send it out, and I'm going to go out and perform that particular presentation using that utility device and we're gonna put the footage up on paper crates, so with their names. So it'll be nice that not only are you buying something, but I really stand behind this and believe that this is a phenomenal effect. This is not something that's gonna go away. This is something that you will see stage magicians using. You will see close up parlor. It's just a phenomenal. Whenever you see it, you'll understand. It's not one of those things that you get and you realize you got to strap a 3 foot pole on your arm. So it's like. It's real easy to use, and it's self-working, so it leaves all this room for presentation, which is what we all look for in magic. So,
And where can people go ahead and get it?
You can get it at papercranemagic.com. I do know Murphy's is going to start selling it here in a couple weeks, so it'll be at all your local dealers, as well as you'll see some stuff in Genie as well next month or two. So it'll probably be more available on other sites. I know that we just released Sweetly Done, which is a sugar packet effect that just kind of went international pretty quickly. It's done pretty well. So you can check up on that one as well. So,
all right. And you work a lot with Paper Crane, right?
Yeah, I do. I actually do a lot of consulting for them. We've had artists come in such as Eric Ross, Dan Haas, and we've worked with a few other people. We've got a few other people they're working with right now, and I've kind of consulted with them on creativity and sitting down helping these guys on not more so changing the effect itself, but helping with the presentation and making it more realistic and practical. I'm not a real animated kind of guy. I don't have any problem with guys that are like that. It's just not my style. So I like to get to the point and present things in a magical manner and just get it done. And that probably comes from my history of working in the clubs. When you work in the clubs, you don't have a lot of time to use a lot of words and a lot of pattern. You really have to create more of a visual standard of things. Which is good because on video, people don't want to watch a 10-minute trailer. So it's good. I do consult with them on that, as well as I'm here in town, actually. I just came back to town because we're finishing up another project I'm on right now. That should be finished up next week. So, and then I'm headed back to Indianapolis for a while. So
very cool. Very cool. Of course, that is a Paper Crane Magic. .com, and you can find more about you at shaneblackmagic.com, right?
Absolutely. And I'll give you guys a little sneak peek. We're finishing
Please do.
Up a project. Yeah, we're finishing up a project right now. It won't be ready for Magi Fest. I'm in town for Magi Fest as well. I've actually been kind of boxing a bunch of stuff up today for that. But I'll be at Magi Fest today, but hopefully we will have, I'm thinking springtime, this will be released. It's going to be called Eminent. It is a, I've had the backing support of a lot of guys on this, and it's been a long lasting effect of mine. When I first created it, I'll be honest with you, I didn't like it. I didn't like the idea of it, and I took it into a magic shop, a brick and mortar shop back in Fort Worth, and I showed it to one of the owners there, and he was like, "Oh, this is a phenomenal idea. You really need to run with this." And I really was not really. Into the effect, and then I start playing with it, and it's grown on me over the past 4 years, and now the gimmick itself is phenomenal. So I took it in, I showed it to guys such as Aaron DeLong, Sean Dunn, and all those guys, and they were just blown away. They were like, Dan saw it, he was like, dude, that's great. And then I saw him how I showed him how easy it was, and he goes, that's just great, it's just phenomenal, it's easy work. And what it is it's a visual card that melts through another card. It's very easy to use. It's very visual. You take a card, you talk about, certain things about how you've through your experiences of magic, something that you found that you could do, and you visually rub a card and it starts to melt through the other card. And it actually looks like that. It's not one of these rhetorical, lame looking devices that you use.
Yeah.
It actually looks like solid magic. And what's great is you can hand it out for immediate inspection. No switches.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, you can't beat that. So
no, you cannot. You cannot. All right. So check it out. Paper Crane Magic and Shane Black Magic for all of your Shane Black Magic needs. Check it out, folks. All right. As we mentioned, actually, you know what? Before we get into that, we got a couple emails about our topic last week about replacing or franchising magic acts. Our favorite emailer, Steve Chesaday, the rock and roll magician, wrote in, "Hi, Justin, I heard you talking about the magic show so popular that the members could be replaced or duplicated in other cities. Actually, something like that did exist outside of Chicago. Back in the 70s, there was an indoor amusement park called Old Chicago. It featured an illusion called the Charlie Baffle Show. The main characters were large, oversized masks and performed magic and illusions. As you may have guessed, the star performer could have been anyone that fit the costume. Over the years, many local magicians played the part of Charlie. The cast, of course, were interchangeable. I always thought it was a pretty neat concept. Paul Osborne may have even been involved at the time. So very, very cool. And we also got another one about the Banana Man. And I forget, I lost the email. So if you emailed that in, I do apologize that I lost your email. But I do want to give you credit. Because apparently, you know, we were talking last week, Shane, about, franchising. You know, just doing an act and then plugging in other people, around the world or nationally. Kind of like the Blue Man Group. And I didn't think it was possible with magic, but... Apparently it is, and it's been done.
I listened to some of that with Cameron Francis. Yes. One that you did. Yes, I did. I listened to it. Cameron is a good friend of mine.
Oh, rock and roll.
Yeah. You know, I really don't have any comment on that.
No, you don't need to. You don't need to. I just didn't want you to feel left out while I was reading the email. All right, folks, remember, if you guys have anything that you want to fire back on this show, it is show@itricks.com. But let's get... to the final story of the podcast in preparation for the big iPad announcement. David Blaine told the New York Times that Steve Jobs, the Apple CEO, was the ultimate showman, adding that he was proficient in such a magician-like traits as keeping the audience excited the whole way leading up to the reveal. Should it be any kind of payback? When the iPad was released, it was called a magical device. So maybe that there's some back and forth between Jobs and Blaine. Let me ask you this, Shane. Who is the greatest non-magic showman alive? And I almost wanted to title that, who is the greatest non-magic magician alive? Someone who has all those magician traits, but just cuts out the whole doing magic part.
Well, that's you, Justin.
Oh, there we go.
No, I would have to say Michael Jackson, but he's passed away now, so I can't say him. So
no, you have to pass the crown.
I would have to say, honestly, Prince.
There we go.
Yeah, Prince, because you want to talk about showmen. You go to a Prince show, it doesn't matter, guy or girl, you're going to walk away just like, wow.
Pregnant.
What, show me up? Absolutely. I prayed it. Let's hope not.
No, I mean, Prince's life is performance art. I'll tell you what, there was, and I don't know, I mean, I talking sports on a magic podcast is always death, so I'll keep it quiet. But for anybody who watched it, the Dallas-Minnesota game, which was in the Metrodome.
Oh, my God.
Prince was in his luxury box, and it's just so random. They cut to him, and you always kind of forget that Prince is a sports fan. But he's just in, everybody, they're kicking the hell out of Dallas. It's a big Minnesota win. Everybody kind of sees where the game is going. Everybody in the box is rocking and rolling and high-fiving and drinking, having a great time. And then there's Prince in a black jumpsuit looking like he's scouting the players. Absolutely stoic, not moving, pencil-thin John Waters mustache. And it is the strangest thing you've ever seen in your entire life. That he's just, you can tell he's like intensely studying the game. You know, it is hilarious and awesome.
That is hilarious. And yeah, what can you say to that? You can't even say anything to that.
Nothing. Yeah.
Nothing.
You can start singing Purple Rain. That's really the only thing that you can do when speaking about Prince. And to further my analysis, Purple Rain, Purple Rain. He's awesome. That's a great answer, Shane. I'll tell you what, I would offer a rebuttal, but I have none. You've won. That is the correct answer to that question.
Well, I hope I said something with some content tonight.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you what, we're just going to go out right on that. Of course, we want to thank Shane Black for making his way onto the Magic Week and review your iTricks debut. Thanks for taking the time out, buddy.
No problem. You ever want me back, just give me a show.
Absolutely. All right, folks. Well, if you, again, would like to fire back on anything you heard on this podcast, it is show@itricks.com. And a reminder, you know, download our Magic Stars podcast. If you listen to this podcast and you don't listen to the Magic Stars podcast, well, then you're missing, you know, more interviews, more news, more tour dates. You know, that's where you can get that. But until next week, folks, I am Justin Robert Young, Justin R. Young on Twitter. Bang a gong.
iTricks.com.